everyone. It is Chris. Welcome to the Bonner Breakdown. This is episode number 13 with Jeff Connolly from Bonner County Commissioner. And we are bringing this episode to you via Bonner Community Housing Agency, our BCHA. You can go to bonnerhousing.org and find out more information about Bonner Community Housing Agency. We have our Finally Home class once a month at our offices, and we ask that you sign up, register if you know anybody that's interested in taking the Finally Home class. You can get information at bonnerhousing.org, and you can find out that information there. So with that, we also want to say thank you to our season sponsor, Ting Crazy Fast Fiber Internet. Ting is one of those companies that they jump into a community, they get wildly involved, and they're an internet service provider. And what an internet service provider does is they build, they light, and then they service the network that is bringing you the internet. Here we've had the old copper wire internet with DSL. Some of you have cable internet that comes over like communications cables. And Ting is different from both of those. It's really radically different from the old copper internet because it is extremely fast and extremely reliable. So with that, we want to say thank you to Ting as our season sponsor here. So this episode is brought to you by Bonner Community Housing Agency and Ting Crazy Fast Fiber Internet. You can get more information at ting.com, ting.com/Sandpoint. And you can check your address there if you don't already have it. And if you don't, go ahead and register and you can get $200 off your installation there. Now, with that, we want to jump right into the best part of your day, the best part of your week, and that is the good report. Listen, there's nothing better than grabbing a cup full of gratitude, right? And I think that whatever cup you have, you want to grab that and you want to think about those things that you're grateful for. You want to put your gratitude in the cup. We are going to toast and cheers to the good report. Every time we get a chance, we say, thank goodness, thank God, thank whoever in your world you want to thank, but we're grateful for things and we want to say thank you. And that is why we have a cheers to the good report. Now, before we do the cheers, before you're totally invigorated by cheersing by giving a toast to the good report with me, today, this good report is really about people who help you out every day. There are people in your lives that do something every single day to help you. I'm always struck by how helpful this community is, but there's some people who help with the Bonner Breakdown and help with the good report and they help out. And that's Alyssa Landtrip, who does all of our production work. She's very helpful with that. In today's episode, we have a brand new person helping produce. That's Kim Smith with Century 21. She's been very interested in figuring out how to help out. So she came on and I'm outing you, Kim, as the producer of the show. You did a phenomenal job. Super impressed. First time out, had never touched production equipment. Did a really good job. We try to make it easy. So Kim did a great job. But you know who films all of my good reports? And it's my best little producer ever. And here's her producing right now. She's going to switch it over so you can see her. And there she is. There she is doing the productions. Okay, switch it back. That's Quinn, my 7-year-old daughter. She is the production assistant for the good report. So we want to just say thank you to all the people in our lives we're grateful for helping us out in all the different ways that you help us out. So with that, we say cheers, grab your cup of gratitude, and we're going to say cheers and enjoy a great sip to the good report. Ting. There you go. We just clinked our glasses. Ting. And let's take that amazing sip of gratitude. Oh man, it tastes good. I'm grateful for the good sip. All right, with that, we're going to jump right in with Jeff Connolly, episode 13 of the Bonner Breakdown. So Jeff, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate having you on here. you are one of those guests that I've really looked forward to having on because we've always had really good conversations. We've worked together a little bit on the Barnard Regional team and things like that with the housing issue. You were on the housing subcommittee and all that. But over the course of this little time that we spend together, we're going to talk a little bit about your history. I want to hear some of the things that are really important to you as far as a county commissioner goes and some of that stuff. But we need to get your history. So
yeah,
good to have you.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Chris, and I appreciate you inviting me. So I was born and raised in Priest River, so I've been a resident for 61 years. Mm-hmm. That's telling my age, which is never a good thing when you get older, but it is what it is. And worked as a logger my whole life from the time I graduated high school, so I had 40 years in the timber industry, and 15 years as a Priest River City Council person. So that's where I first got my start in government. And then I was there until elected as a county commissioner and then resigned that position to take that post.
So having been here 61 years, right, and being in the logging industry for 40 years, what are the biggest changes that you've seen in the logging industry? Just in the logging industry.
Yeah, the logging industry has changed a lot. It's all mechanized basically now. Mm-hmm. The people on the ground, there's a lot less people that are out there doing the job the old-fashioned way, that with the chainsaws and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Mostly mechanized. So that's the one thing. And then I think that there was like 14 mills in Bonner County, and now there's three. So it's changed considerably over the mm-hmm. years. I've got to see most of that in my 40 years. So
luckily, it's safer now.
Yeah, it is safer.
You know, I think so.
People are in cabs mostly, mm-hmm. and you don't see the fatalities or the real horrendous injuries that you used to see back when I started it.
But. Gosh, that's a long time in the logging industry.
It is.
Yeah.
I was fairly lucky. Only had a few minor injuries. Didn't have anything major. So.
Oh, wow.
I consider myself very lucky.
Yeah. So what made you step into city council in Priest River?
So I think the biggest thing was watching the changes that were coming down the road that I didn't necessarily agree with. Okay. I think that that's what makes anybody get involved. It's like when you don't like what you see or what you think a trend is, in my opinion, a lot of new folks that didn't understand the culture of what Priest River had always been.
Right.
So it's trying to keep a little bit of the culture that's been there for hundreds of years, the logging, the lumbering, and to not change it into something that it wasn't. I think that was the first thing that made me get really interested and passionate about it. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, you always think you can do better than the other guy. So you step in and you hope for the best, right?
Boy, isn't that the truth? You know, don't we do that? I think we all do that quite a bit, you know, where we're like, if only I had a shot at that, right?
Give me a shot.
Yeah, that's interesting. What were some of the changes that you were seeing?
Well, you know, our industry comes under attack, the logging industry and the timber industry in general, quite frequently. And you try to want to give a different voice because, you know, you want to actually... I've spent a lot of time training and showing people what the new systems, how they work, you know, the mechanical systems and what they can actually accomplish. So for me, it was like, that's not being heard. We're just talking, we're dwelling on things that were done years ago.
Right.
Rather than what's actually happening now.
Right. Yeah. So that was, and there's been huge transformation of how that industry operates.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was part of what the whole idea is, to get the word out there. Mm-hmm. But for the council, I just saw a lack of people that had been in the area and knowing what it takes to make Priest River kind of tick, because it's not, you know, it's a community that isn't a rich community. Mm-hmm. It's a place where a lot of people have lived for a long time, and we are making changes that were making it hard for some of the people that have been there.
Yeah.
So we kind of, I kind of wanted to steady the course, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. When you look at the changes in Priest River, what are some of the most notable things that you'd say, hey, you've lived there 61 years. What are some of the biggest changes that you have seen happen?
Well, you know, some of the mills going down had a major issue. We had three large sawmills right in, you know, within 5 miles of the city of Priest River. Mm-hmm. The jobs that that eliminated was really tough on the community. So it was trying to reinvigorate. And they still are, and I still participate in the urban renewal as a chair to try to keep rethinking and reinvigorating the community. And I think we've been fairly successful.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's not Sandpoint, but we're doing some cool things down there too.
Yeah, so that's awesome. That's great. Do you have any big highlights from being on city council there in Priest River?
Well, we during my time, we did redo the water plant and put a new water tower in, so we have dual water towers, which helps with our fire fighting flows, which was something that had been for years hadn't been addressed. We also redid the sewer during we had a sewer bond, so all of these things were to help with the infrastructure. Hard surfacing most of the roads, nearly all the roads now in the city of Priest River, which is a big deal. For a long time, a little bit too much status quo without trying to make the investment into the infrastructure.
Okay.
In the city.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard because there is a mindset, maybe you can correct me on this, but, and I don't know about necessarily Priest River, but I notice in small towns, maybe in most towns, I don't know, but there's a mindset that because I pay county taxes and because I pay some city taxes, signing up for a bond or paying any extra for any other services should never have to happen.
Yeah, we hear that, but the actuality is in my opinion anyway, being on both sides of it.
Yeah.
The only way you do the extra, go the extra mile, is by bond, because you're really only bringing enough money into maintain and hopefully operate the systems that you have and the infrastructure you have.
Right.
To do any improvements or new things, you're destined to either have some sort of a tax or a bond issue. Otherwise, you're not going to get there. You just can't. You just, a small community like Priest River to raise $4 million for a bond, it's just not. Or I mean, to repair your water system, it's just not possible.
Yeah, it's
without
hard.
A bond.
That's hard. Yeah. So. Okay. What do you love about Priest River?
You know, you can leave Priest River for a while, and you can come back, and you know, you could probably leave for 5 or 6 years, come back, and not much has changed. You know, you might say, oh, there's a couple new things, but it stays the same mostly, generally speaking. And the people, I mean, I know all the people in the town mostly, you know, except for the newcomers. And and I think that that's a lot of it. It's just like everybody knows me. It's hard for me to go to the store or to the hardware store without having to spend an hour discussing all the county's business and things like that.
So you you're got family there, and so what's married?
Yeah, I'm married for 40 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Almost 41 actually.
Oh, awesome.
A couple weeks be 41, and then I have two grown children, of course, a 40-year-old son and a 37-year-old daughter that I just gave away in marriage.
Congratulations. That's awesome. That's
and
great.
Four grandchildren.
Wow.
Two boys, two girls.
Yeah. So. Awesome.
It's pretty cool family. I was one of four siblings that we were all born and, you know, raised in Priest River, and my brother still lives there and owns Priest River Glass, and my two sisters live in one in Post Falls and one in Hauser. So we're all still pretty close here.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's great. So tell me about your jump from the city council in Priest River. You move in to decide at some point, I'm going to run for county commissioner for this region. What was kind of your motivation? What was happening? What were you seeing?
So I'd been talking about it, and with some of my close friends and stuff, about maybe stepping up and doing something like that. And had received some encouragement, and finally thought, you know, I don't believe that the candidate that is there now, that the person that's doing the job is doing the right thing for the county.
What year was this?
It was 3 years ago.
Okay.
So it was,
okay.
Yeah, 16, 17. So I've been doing it for 3 years, and I'll be up for election this coming year. So,
okay.
It was a 4-year term. The commissioner goes 4 years and then 2 years. Rotating.
Yeah.
So I just, same old thing, kind of like what we talked about before, is I think I can do a better job, and I, you know, hope to try.
Give it
a whirl and see what I can do.
Was there any specific issues that you felt were really important that needed to be addressed?
Yeah. One of the things that I thought you could see was the employees and having what I'm going to call happy and content employees. I think that they were struggling with that.
Mm.
And part of it was pay. Part of it was supervision. One thing about with commissioners, when you have three different commissioners, this is something I've never dealt with before. And it's a difficult situation because generally speaking, anybody that's going to raise their hand to be a commissioner is going to be somebody that likes to be in charge. So when you have three people that love to be in charge, it becomes a very difficult situation. So, but we have done some great things for our employees. We feel we have given raises. We have put the employee first rather than we can't do it this year. We just don't have enough money. We've just slacked off. Backed off on some of the other stuff, you know,
okay.
And said,
so made the it's staff raises, a real priority. Yeah.
Yeah, it's raises and it's benefits. And, you know, we just did a PTO. We went from the normal vacation sick leave to a PTO program, which is really good for them. And it's good for the county also because it allows the county to identify what our liability is and be able to keep track of it closer than,
way easier. That's awesome. So when you jump in, what were some big adjustments that you had to make? Obviously not being in charge, right? Having a team in charge instead of one person. And then what were some other big shifts you had to make?
Well, you know, Glenn Bailey was there when I got there. So Glenn was a good mentor. So, you know, because calm and, you know, not, doesn't, act quickly or, irrationally. He's just was solid, you know? So that was a great thing too, to be able to work with him and under him. And, as he was the chairman 2 years, that first 2 years I was there.
And he just recently left.
Yes, right. Year ago now.
And Steve Bradshaw got elected into his spot. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. Just the difference in the hierarchy and trying to work together and try to accomplish everything and still all get along. You know, you're not going to agree on everything, and you shouldn't.
Yeah.
You wouldn't really want that. But yet, I think we agree still even on about 90% or even more.
Yeah.
Every now and then there's that thing that we can't get through, and usually it's me that says I can't agree to that, and I'll vote no. But generally speaking, we can we work our way through it.
So what are some of the kind of, what would you say are some of the big issues that you're looking at and that you're feeling pretty passionate about right now in the council?
Well, growth is a huge issue.
I mean,
Bonner County, doesn't matter where you are in Idaho, you're being hit with huge amount of growth.
Yeah.
It's important for us to be able to try to do the best we can to manage growth. I mean, you're taking it as it comes to a point, but you're trying to steer it a certain direction and get it where you would rather have it.
Mm-hmm.
So the sub-area planning commissions, we have five of them now. And they're Priest Lake, Priest River, Blanchard, Sagal, and Sully.
Sully Valley, yeah.
So as tough as that is to get all of these groups and they're all meeting separately, and our planning department who goes out there and meets at their wherever they choose to meet.
Oh, that's
usually
cool.
You know, like they meet at Priest Lake, they meet up there at the either the library or at the school, and so then that encourages the people up there.
That's great.
To participate.
Yeah.
And I think this is, how do you want to see your area grow rather than to sit in Sandpoint in the general and just make a call from Sandpoint? We're out there getting input from the people that are there, not only the committee members, but whoever that is in the community that wants to participate. So so they don't have to drive to Sandpoint to participate in something that's going to happen right in their backyard. So I think it's a great thing. And
that's awesome.
Milton has led that charge, Milton Allerton.
Yeah, yeah. And he seems like a sharp dude.
Yes, very good.
Yeah.
A great find. The commissioners before us had recruited him, and it seems to be a good fit for the county.
Yeah, and I appreciate that he can see the broad scope of what needs to happen, and he chooses to stay outside of the politics as the actual planner.
Yeah, the best he can.
Best he can. Well, yeah. I mean, you got to deal with it, obviously, but you know, it seems like he does a pretty good job.
Yes, I think so too. And one of the things with Milton and his team is they're not afraid to take on a lot of the things that have probably the can's been kicked down the road a little bit. He'll redo the comp plan. He's looking for problem areas that we continue to have issues with, and he addresses it. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes pretty painstaking and pretty painful to make changes to the comp plan and to the different things when you're ahead of planning.
Well, and it seems like most people don't want anything to change.
Yeah. Except for when it affects them.
Right.
What we see is we don't want that change. We want you to leave it the same because, and then you say, well, what about this? What about that? And then it's like, ooh, yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you can explain it to them and usually get through it.
Okay.
Right off the bat, it's usually like, oh, we don't want any of that. But usually if you can sit and talk to them for a while and give them the facts, you can usually get through it.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. How would you characterize the county's relationship with its departments? You know, you got obviously you've been working on staffing. You've got several large county departments that are under your guys' supervision. And obviously then you've got like the sheriff's office and that you kind of control a purse, but he's autonomous. So, there's some different things. Do you feel like the departments all seem to be working well together and well with the commission? Not that I've seen anything. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think that all in all, we have really stressed that working together. When I got into office, I really feel like there was a lot of, no, this is my little area here. You stay over there. We'll take care of this. We have tried real hard, and we have had quite a little bit of success to try to make the folks realize how important it is to work together to accomplish the common goal. The sheriff, when you talk about other electeds, that's another thing that I wasn't 100% prepared for, is working, 9 elected officials all working together to try to get to the common goal, which is to give the people of Bonner County the best service you possibly can.
Right.
You got assessors. It's not always easy. There's different personalities that come into it.
You're not hiring.
No. If you're hiring and firing that person, you can probably get pretty close to what you want because you're going to tell them what you expect. And if you don't get that, you're going to make a change.
Yeah.
But in this situation, the voters do that.
Yeah.
So
that's good.
It works all right. It's a learning curve for me to try to understand that, oh yeah, that over there, we don't get to touch any of that or do anything with that. We just try to, so I'll use the word collaborate, which is probably the most overused word out there.
There's a lot of overused words right now.
Collaboration between the electeds is very important, and we're doing pretty good.
That's good to hear. And so what's the relationship like with the sheriff's office?
It's pretty good.
Okay.
We have worked real hard to get our deputies at a wage that is comparable to other.
Okay. I know that's been a hard,
it's been a hard battle.
Yeah.
We really had to make some adjustments, mm-hmm. and they're painful in the budget, mm-hmm. but it had to be done. We were losing so many of our sheriff's employees, you know, deputies and different things like that, that by the time you retrain them, get them through post and then lose them, it's super painful.
Yeah, people don't understand the cost of turnover. Right. I mean, we have to deal with that with our school districts. We have to deal with that, you know, when we deal with the housing issue. Bringing in somebody new is so expensive because of the training and everything else. And, mm-hmm. and it's just like, it's pretty wild. So when you look at the sheriff's department, you've got very strong leader in mm-hmm. Daryl Wheeler.
Yeah.
I really enjoy him. I've gotten to know him over the years. Just such a gentle person.
Yep. You but know. he can really get the job done.
He does.
He sticks to his guns and mm-hmm. He's got a agenda that is, you know, is solid. So
yeah, well, and it seems like he sticks to his agenda.
Yes,
you know, he's not going to veer to the left or right. He's very clear about what his goal is.
He's down the middle.
And, yeah, yep, for sure. So when you look at the relationship between you and Dan and Steve, don't want to get you in trouble, mm-hmm. As far as airing any dirt or anything, but it seems like you guys do pretty good job, you know, communicating in the meetings. And I've been to a bunch, but I only sat all the way through on your Tuesday morning meetings. I used mm-hmm. to come and pray for those, as in that pastoral role. And I'd stay, for a while and get some updates on what's going on. Been to some specialty meetings, some special council meetings, here and there. Seems like you guys seem to communicate pretty well. How would you describe the relationship? So,
yeah, I think so. And we do have disagreements. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
We're all not always on the same page.
No.
But we get through it and get beyond it. I mean, we don't get hung up on it, and we don't let it bog us down because we have so many things that we need to accomplish.
Yeah.
So we don't agree on something, and it comes down to a vote, and mm-hmm. I vote no, say, for instance, and the other two vote yes. So be it. It is what it is. The majority rules, mm-hmm. and I move on, and mm-hmm. everybody else does too. Yeah. So I think that that's important, that we've learned, even if we don't agree, to try to stay focused on what, you know, the bigger picture.
No, that's really good. It's really good because you guys have to have your arguments in public.
Yeah, true.
You don't get to have like, hey, let's go talk about this afterwards or in a different room.
Yeah, let's go have a caucus and talk about all the different things. It's all out there in the public.
Yeah, and there's some things that are saved for executive session,
mm-hmm.
But that's not the course of business discussion, right? Those are specialty items that go into executive session. You know, one of those things that I think has gone into executive session is the discussion about, you know, the funding for the lawsuit.
Sure.
Right. And some people have been pretty, you know, kind of like, how much is that going to cost? And, mm-hmm. where, you know, where's this going? And seems like all that's being held pretty close to the chest as kind of a maneuver, at least not a maneuver, but a strategy. You know, as far as how much are we willing to spend? We're not going to tell you how much we're willing to spend. For me, it totally makes sense to do that, regardless of where you sit on the issue. You know, like I think anybody who's going to fight a battle or a case would do that. So what's your take on all that with the city county lawsuit?
So, you know, I can't say a lot because it's still pending. But mm-hmm. you know, I want to first say that none of the commissioners want to see the festival damaged or put out of business or anything like that. What we're trying to do is get ahead of something that might be coming down the road that will mm-hmm. be a much worse and bigger issue than what's in front of us right now.
Okay.
So the whole idea was to hopefully get it in front of a judge, mm-hmm. just to hear it and say, this is the way you mm-hmm. should move forward. Because mm-hmm. obviously we have differing opinions on what the law says.
Correct. Yeah.
I mean,
the city and the county are differing.
And it's about the law. It's not mm-hmm. about the Second Amendment. People are trying to make it about the Second Amendment, but it's about the state law. It's so for me,
uh-huh.
as usual, I want to just sit down and talk, you know, mm-hmm. let's just sit down and talk it out and see if we can find a way to both say, yeah, that makes sense. And I think that we should move forward in that mm-hmm. direction. Mm-hmm. Obviously that's not the way this went.
Uh-huh.
And for me, it's painful to see Bonner County in a lawsuit with our biggest municipality. It's just, it's non-productive. It's just, mm-hmm.
yeah.
It's something that we should never have to do. And as far as the money and the strategy and stuff, you know, we have attorneys, we have our own attorneys, and we have some outside attorneys that are telling us and advising us what we should do.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think this is taxpayer money. I think that we somehow should be able to release, okay. not exactly what we're spending on each and every case, but we should be able to release what we're spending. I kind of want to go with, like, let's get a spreadsheet out there.
Okay.
This is their money. We're spending their money. We're making a decision that is affecting mm-hmm. the taxpayer. So let's just do a spreadsheet with just clumps of money, like, say, different categories that you can just put 4 or 5 categories and say, this is how much money we're spending on each one of these categories.
Yep.
It doesn't define it as this is how much money we're spending to defend this or to fight this.
And I think it's important for voters to remember that they put the power of the purse in your hands.
Yes.
They really did. They said, we're going to entrust you with the money.
Right. But
and that's, you're still accountable for that. Where in the place you're most accountable is at the ballot box,
mm-hmm.
right? And of course, if you ever misuse that money or did something illegal or anything, of course, there's other remedies. But dealing with this lawsuit doesn't seem to qualify for any of those things when people bring that up. You know, like, oh, they're you know, misusing the money. They're, you know, that, well, you know, I think it doesn't seem like you're qualifying for a misuse. But they do need to remember they elected 3 people who made a decision, and this is where it's going.
Correct. And you know, we're very cognizant of that.
We're
always trying to say, now, okay,
yeah,
how, where does this end up if we don't do something? Yeah. And, you know, are we, you know, so we want to be as transparent as possible. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that I kept harping on when I came into mm-hmm. this. It seemed like, hey, I don't know that you're being as transparent as you can be.
Yeah.
Seems like some of this stuff is being decided behind the scenes. And
I think at the time with the HR stuff, right? Wasn't there a lot of stuff that was happening behind the scenes
yes.
that could have been brought forward? So it's really interesting because what's the Attorney General of the state say about this situation? Have we gone there?
We did. It's funny thing about the Attorney General, they don't like to be drug into something that they consider a political issue. And this could be considered somewhat political.
Okay.
There's 2 different sides, and a lot of it is politicized.
Okay.
They tend to say, you know, this we're going to you're going to need to rely on your prosecuting attorney and, you know, and your civil attorneys because they're kicking it back your way and saying, no, we're not stepping into this.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's a lot of folks that would like to see it go, you know, up the chain of, you know, maybe to the Supreme Court and see a decision made that clarifies it forever and, you know, like that. But I think it's more of a, at the end of the day, I think it's going to take legislation to clear up the, it's all about public land, whether, you know, you can break that bond between public land
and a private to a lease.
Exactly. Right? Like, and the actuality is I'd encourage it to try to be on private property so that they could do whatever they want. They want to ban guns, or they want to ban alcohol, or they want to do whatever they want to do. That to us seems like a fairly decent solution also.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, it's interesting because I don't know, I'm just thinking that we often find ourselves in curious positions. And you know, the way through this issue, could have gone a lot of different directions.
Mm-hmm.
The route that it went will ultimately probably, from come down with some type of ruling from a court, I would imagine. I don't imagine that this would end up in any type of settlement, any type of, you know, like, do you see this with the lawsuit the way it's going? Do you see it coming out any other way than judgment from a judge on this particular issue?
Well, I always have hopes. You know what I mean? I mean,
sure.
We're here to try to come up with a solution with differing opinions of what the law says. And for me, and I'll just say it, I mean, it seems like the more attorneys you involve, the more convoluted the whole thing gets, and the more, you know, you stand back and you take sides and you don't, you know, then the attorneys start talking more than the people that should be saying, well, isn't there a way through this, you know? So I don't know. I still have hopes.
Okay.
I'm one of those ultimate hopeful, you know, hopeful people.
Optimistic, that, yeah, man. I'm Come optimistic. Come on. Me too. That's great.
I try to see, hey, we, you know,
I'm always,
we've been, there has been discussion, so I'm always in hope.
Yeah, I'm always thinking that every time we feel like it's black and white, there's a third option.
Oh yeah,
there's always a third option. You know,
for
and
sure.
I just and it might not be perfect, but there's always there's always another opportunity there. You know, so well, thanks for addressing some of that, and I think it is interesting because, you know, I had Dan on here and we talked for at length. I just put a little excerpt out of that conversation on the lawsuit, and he explained, you know, kind of what his process was and where he was at and why he kind of looked at it the way that he did. So appreciate you sharing, because it's helpful to know, because you guys don't get the chance to talk about this kind of stuff when you're all three sitting there making decisions.
No. You know, and we don't talk about it outside of it because
you can't talk to each other.
It's illegal. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't that wild? Do you think that's a weird law?
I think it had good intentions. Uh-huh. I think that there was a time when people would probably just make all the decisions behind closed doors and possibly just come out. But I think that you have to give better guidance of what this means. These open meetings, it says, deliberate, towards the decision. I'm not sure where that, how you start and stop that. You know what I mean? I mean, you can have a discussion. Yeah,
that's a tough one.
It's another one of the things that's in the, state's hands, as far as, you know, I'm sure when they drew it up, it seemed like it made perfectly good sense, but by the time it gets amended and gets to us, and you know, it's tough to try to get done what they want you to do without being able to discuss stuff.
Well, and I love the concept of open discussions and being able to have set up time for conversations, even if it's in the public forum, like open to the public. I think technology has changed what a public forum looks like.
For sure.
We're in a public forum right now. You and I are having a private conversation in our little studio in the basement of the housing agency, and it's public.
Yep.
Right? Where anybody can come look at this, watch it, see it, and they can see, hey, here's the entire process that Jeff has. Here's the process Chris has. There's no... behind, but as soon as the camera's off, is there another conversation happening? You know, people ask those types of questions. So there's an issue with technology, but still, I think, like, man, I'm noticing all the subgroup meetings are online. All the, you know, all the county commissioner meetings are online.
Right.
Planning and zoning meetings are online. All this stuff is online. And if you guys decided to have a, we're going to have an internal conversation at this and we're going to put it online, does that count as an open meeting, just, or does it require people to ask questions?
No, it doesn't require people to ask questions. Actually, you're not required to have public participation. You're encouraged, but you're not required. It's a public meeting, which means that the public can observe, you know, your meeting, but it doesn't mean that you have to take and answer questions and anything like that. that is something that we all agree that needs to be done. I mean, mm-hmm. we want the public to participate, but yeah. we want the public to also behave in a fashion that's not rude or obnoxious towards anybody.
That's why online is so much better, because they can just get it all out on their keyboards and you don't have to read the comments.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess. You know? I question that, because I'm a little old school, and I don't do the Facebook thing. Yeah. I'm just not that person.
Yeah.
I'll just call you up on the phone or come over and talk to you if I've got an issue mm-hmm. with you. I'd rather face to face with you, you know,
yeah, that's
rather great. Than say something on Facebook mm-hmm. and have that misconstrued or have a bunch of other people jump in. I mean, I'm more of a one-on-one type of guy that wants to have a discussion and air it out.
That's great. That's great. All right, everybody, we're going to take a moment. We're going to talk about our sponsor, Ting. They're sponsoring this whole season, and Ting is crazy fast fiber internet. You can go to ting.com/sandpoint and get information, put in your address, see if there is Ting at your address. If it is not there, make sure you pre-register, because you will save money on the installation. So one of the questions that we get about Ting is, what is fiber? Well, fiber is an equalizer. It levels the playing field, especially when it comes to high-speed internet infrastructure. Most developed nations have a high-speed internet all over their countries. America, not so much. Small towns like ours, it took a long time for us to get fiber internet. But now that we have it, Ting is the equalizer for extremely fast internet. Fiber is fast, it is reliable, with a huge capacity for future growth. And I think that's really important to keep in mind. As technology evolves, we'll need stronger and better internet. Fiber factors this growth in from the start, because it's rapidly and massively expandable on its current network. And that's why they actually put the feed directly up to your house. It's not being pared down over and over and over and over again. You actually get the full speed directly to your location, which is just absolutely wonderful. Ting gigabit internet runs at 1,000 megabytes per second, and that Ting gigabit internet fiber costs $89 a month, plus your startup fees for unlimited monthly data with no caps or limits on what you use. Ting internet does not do contracts or termination fees, and customers are free to leave Ting at any time. See, Ting thinks the best service at the best possible price is the best retention strategy that they need. So with that, check it out, ting.com, ting.com/sandpoint. Check your address and get Ting gigabit fiber internet today for $89 a month. And we're going to jump back in here to our conversation. So, well, and, you know, we saw that the reason, and I don't think I've ever described what brought about this podcast on the air yet. So, and this came out of one of our Bonner regional team meetings,
uh-huh.
right? So we're all sitting around, and the question was, and this is when it was hosted the last time it was at the county offices. And the question was, what's some of the biggest challenges that you have in your community? And we're going around and I'm listening, and I'm hearing over and over and over communication. Mm-hmm. Can't get my message out. I can't get, like, that issue that's here. Like, nobody pays attention or shows up to the meetings. Nobody actually knows what that thing means or what it's for. They just either see a price tag or you know, and it was from planners, you know, commissioners, mm-hmm. mayors, like everybody in this room that was there, and the stakeholders going, hey, we got a problem. And I've just been watching some podcast interviews, and I thought, I wonder if we could do something like that. And I think you were there when I asked.
Oh, I'm sure I was.
Yeah. I said, hey, if I put together an hour long, like, sit down, if you've got a big issue, you've got something that you want to actually explain or talk about, or we can have a conversation about it online, or have I'll sit between two people in a debate, you know, like we'll make something happen. would that be of interest to you? And every hand in the room went up. Mm-hmm. Not a single. And I said, okay, well, we'll see what we can do. And we raised like $8,000 in 3 months and started building the studio. You know, it's just amazing, because it seemed like the demand was really high. So we were actually sitting in a room for the sake of communication between all the major stakeholders. And of course, that's, we've kind of put that on pause. It seems like we've put the regional team on pause for that. So what did you really enjoy about that concept? Because I know that you attended all the time. Mm-hmm. You were involved in subcommittees. What did you really like about that regional team concept?
Well, I think that the one thing that it did more than anything was it brought a bunch of different groups that were all doing something, and half of us didn't know what the other one was doing. And we had ideas, like there was a lot of discussion about stuff you were already doing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, hold it. You need to, as a matter of fact, I tried to point somebody your way the other day.
Oh, awesome.
That came into my office.
That's great.
And he said, oh no, I was just there.
Okay.
And I said,
I know exactly who you're talking about.
Perfect. Jeff. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that number one, it was a great spot to be able to air out and just show what everybody was doing or already doing so that we could say, let's not redo that. Because one of the things that I've seen with these communities is they tend to have a couple of, at least, if not three, different committees or groups doing similar or the same things.
Right.
We should, if we could get it all working in one, we could have, we could be much more effective. So that was one of the things that intrigued me. And plus it gave me a chance to sit down with a lot of the people that I don't generally are not in my circle and have a discussion and have an open discussion and an honest discussion about, you know, different things that we disagree on and try to come to some way to find a way to move forward, which I don't know that we did that. We were in the infancy stage of it, but what it did do, it created relationships with people that normally wouldn't have a relationship.
Totally,
you know?
True.
So, I mean, you can,
absolutely.
I can call Shelby, I can call you, I can, you know, and I can get input. I feel comfortable with that, whereas maybe before I didn't.
So. Right, because you know, you spend a little bit of time in a room and you start to hear people's mindset, right? And that's one of the things I appreciated about that was you could hear how people thought.
Right,
it was hilarious because I was watching somebody explain a topic. And they were drawing all straight lines. I think I showed this to you. And then someone else come up and they did everything in circles. And I'm like, oh, this is hilarious because they're a linear thinker and they're very, everything's connected. All the circles connect. And this guy's like, no, that's a line here. This is a line down, you know. So it's just fun to see how people think. You know, one of the things that I think that in a way that would honor the open meeting laws for the county, and in a way that would allow for open dialogue and input between stakeholders. And I'm great with the public watching, no problem with that. But being able to create a mechanism where the county could have staff at a meeting like that, I think would be so, just even if it was once a quarter or once every 6 months, even if it's just to shake hands and get to know each other better, something, because the relationships is what really I think was the biggest benefit of those things. So there was a bunch of things that I really loved about that, and I think finding a way to create a mechanism for that. I talked to Dan about that a little bit. You know, he's like, "Well, as long as we're able to keep the open meeting laws and da da da," and I'm like, "Okay, you know, we're not deliberating on actual decisions. We're just talking about systems and processes primarily."
Right.
Like, what's the, where's this at and what's happening there and how can we help,
right,
you know, each other out in our processes. I'm really hoping that, that we can create an avenue for that. You know, I was blown away, by the concept that that was the goal of that group was to regionalize the region. I mean, that was shocking to me that was even a concept that people were concerned about. Do you kind of have an idea on where that actually came from?
Well, Yeah, I can try to
discuss or talked about or well, ever, anything that we.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when we, it may have got a lot of wind in its sails when we named it Bonner Regional Team, but it didn't matter because 7B was, you know, that was a hated name, you know. So okay, we were just trying to see something or bring something forward that was non. Nobody could come up with a reason why this won't work. I mean, when we picked the name, it was just, it wasn't, yeah, it just, it wasn't anything to it.
Yeah.
It wasn't about regionalization. It wasn't about trying to, what it was is to try to get everybody at the table that could just possibly help each other.
Yeah.
Now, for some reason it got to regionalization of actually government of like, you know, well, there'd be one government in Bonner County or something like that. I mean, that was absolutely never discussed. Now, what was discussed is regionalization of sewage. And it was, we had a discussion, Milton and I met with Southside Sewer District and I think DEQ was there. And we're just trying to figure out, you know, we have a lot of little sewer systems over there on that side of the lake and trying to figure out how we can all work together to try to, you know, utilize not septic systems when we're getting this denser population. If that's regionalization, then I'm sorry, but I'm for it because I think that that makes more sense than everybody trying to do their own thing.
Yeah, infrastructure is always easier to do in larger groups than in the smaller.
And it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, if you can take thousands of septic systems that are actually, you know, fairly congested anymore on those more urban type settings over there and put them into a system and get that sewer treated and tested before release, that's a much better solution. And if it means that a lot of these little communities have to work together to make that happen, I'm all for it. So, I draw the line at, there's no way I want to see our governments, the municipalities and the county or anything else, commingled to try to, you know, have one government. That's, we're all independent. I mean,
yeah, it's not even a hint. There wasn't even a hint of any of that.
That would never work. And I don't know anybody that would.
I haven't heard of a single person talking about it, except for the, I wouldn't call it conspiracy theory, but pretty close.
Yeah.
That there's some plot to get the quad cities into one city.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard anybody talk about Kootenay and Ponderay and Dover all being folded into Sandpoint? Like Sandpoint's this giant sucking sound. I've never heard that.
It would never happen. They're very independent municipalities and they're not interested in that. And,
no.
But as far as working together on infrastructure, critical infrastructure, I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
What you can, I mean, they all share water right now.
Well, yeah. And, well, we look at Sandpoint's, you know, servicing, you know, Ponderay and
plus they share sewer to a certain extent. I mean, so.
And I could see this, I could see Sandpoint water and sewer, you know, eventually working in Dover.
Sure.
You know, spread that direction. You know, Dover's got its own setup, but, you know, I could see them.
Dover has a very good, pretty much brand new sewer system. So, and quite a bit of capacity. But, I mean, if there's ways to work that into some of the outlying or edge areas, you know, and incorporate, you know, to me, I mean, we keep... I think that, you know, there was a lot of talk about the area of city impact, you know, and boy, that's gotten really crazy too, because everybody thinks that means something. And I just don't know what it means. You know, you got the city saying, well, the county's trying to do this. You got the county saying, well, no, we don't, you know, we're just trying to, you know, come up with a plan that makes more sense than having your area of city impact go clear up on a mountain somewhere. Mm-hmm. That's really not, because statute tries to guide you to where you would annex over 10-year period, and I think that's not where we're at.
Well, and from what I understood in the conversation on annexation itself, mm-hmm. it doesn't seem like there's any pushback from the county towards any proposals of annexation.
Absolutely think it should be the way it is. I mean, yeah. I believe that it should be annexed into the city if it's going to be urbanized and if it's going to be that congested or that city-like, okay. it should be yeah. in the city. Yeah. I want it to be managed by a city.
Okay.
Yeah. And I've encouraged, you know, several times people have said, well, I don't want you putting that subdivision right here on our border, and we don't think that that's the right thing to do. I said, well, then work with the developer and annex it. I'd support that yeah. because I think that that's the right thing to
yeah.
do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And generally speaking, when you get up here in Ponderay and Kootenay, it's a little different because they don't control their water or sewer.
Okay.
So, but like, say, in the city of Priest River, if there's somebody that wants to do a development on the edge of, you know, the city, more than likely they're going to need those, that infrastructure, that water and sewers to do that. So right. they're yep. going to yep. approach the city mm-hmm. to get mm-hmm. Annexed in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little different with Kootenay and Ponderay, but, mm-hmm. and they've voiced that several times, which, you know, I do understand that mm-hmm. more totally. Now yeah. because at first it was like, well, you guys control it. And they said, no, we don't have any. They can go out there and they can pick those people up and never get annexed into the city. But obviously, any kind of density like that, we want to be in the cities, or I do anyway. And yeah. I think Milton thinks that's the right thing to do.
Okay. Yeah, good. Any other hot button topics?
Well, there's always a bunch, but I can't.
Anything that you want to clarify or that you felt like, you know, this is something that might be getting misunderstood pretty poorly right now?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. There's always something that, you know, that's being misconstrued. And that was another thing that we talked about in BRT that I brought up,
mm-hmm.
that it'd be nice if somebody could grab all the information that's out there, you know, like say, whether it's the county's doing this or the city's doing that, mm-hmm. and then just proof that and say, you know, have a clearinghouse of a website that says, no, this has been checked out and this is the facts. It's actually, this is the way it stacks up. And this is the truth to that.
Mm-hmm.
That would be so, so helpful, because what happens is with social media is we just get creamed and a lot of it isn't factual.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. you know, and then if somebody gets on there and tries to, you know, dispute it, it's like, well, yeah, they're just trying to, you know,
yeah,
make it sound right for themselves. But in the actuality, it's not factual. So that would be a great help if we could.
2017, the word of the year was post-truth.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're in an era where people will selectively choose what to believe.
Yep.
We will selectively choose what supports our bias, what's the information that supports the way that I think today. And that seems to be the primary what's happening with the polarization and everything that's happening, whether it's mm-hmm. social media or, you know, we're just watching we're watching an impeachment trial where both sides are telling each other, you're lying.
Exactly.
You're lying. Well, you can't both be lying.
Mm-hmm.
There's truth somewhere in there, right? There's an actual real true thing. Now, neither might be what you want, right. But you know, that's just the reality. I think that I'm really hoping, you know, me being the hopeful, optimistic person like you, Jeff, you know, like I'm hoping that we see some changes in that this year. I'm hoping that we're able to, everybody can talk themselves back off the ledge a little bit in their bias and go, okay, I really want to know what's actually real, what's actually true. Mm-hmm. And maybe I don't like the answer, but maybe that's what it is. I have to do that all the time, you know, but
it's
challenging.
It's part of, probably the biggest challenge we face. We spend a lot of time putting out fires that if the people just knew the truth or went out and researched it before repeating it. Because what happens is once they've heard it or once somebody's told them or they've read it, some they just repeat it as mm-hmm. fact. Mm-hmm. Nobody does any background. Yeah. Nobody checks into it. Yeah. Nobody proofs it. So we uh-huh. spend a lot of time uh-huh. just trying to calm people down and say, no, that's not what happened. And that's, you know, yep. different things like that.
So I'll give you a good general rule that I learned in the 2016 election. If I heard somebody said something that to me was like, huh, that didn't sound reasonable. Like they said something, somebody says, oh yeah, this person said this. And I'm like, are they insane? Mm. Are they like, that doesn't make any, I'd actually go watch the video.
Yeah.
You know, I'd go watch the whole thing and I'd be like, wow, that hot take was really not a hot take right. at all. That was just somebody spinning pretty hard on their opinion because they didn't like something. And so, you know, I tend to, like, for example, you know, whenever it comes to, like, right now with, you know, here's what the impeachment articles say. You know what? I can download them off of the mm-hmm. government website and read the whole thing.
Good for you.
Okay, I can read that whole thing. And so I do all of that, and it takes more time mm-hmm. to do it. And thankfully, I'm in a season of life where I got a little bit extra time. You know, I'm taking a little sabbatical at the church and got some time to read through all the stuff, which is great. But otherwise, you have to, like, do a quick review. But I started doing that in 2016. Because I'm like, the world is losing its mind right now. Mm-hmm. I can't even see straight what's actually happening. So, and I think, you know, this next election cycle is going to be the same. And you get to be part of it, my friend. Yeah. Are you actually running?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. You've made the decision. You're going for it?
Yeah, I threw my hat in the ring. And I hope to serve another 2 years beyond the year I have here, just to try to wrap up some loose ends. And okay. I believe we've done some good things.
Sure.
And we'll continue to, you know, we've worked real hard to make the county more business like. Mm-hmm. I used to say we're going to make it run like a business, but I don't quite do that anymore. That's not possible, but more business like, and driven by common sense instead of a rule book or something. Let's think about this. Yep. Let's think it through. Yep. Let's make decisions based on some common sense.
Move on.
Yeah. But
that's good.
The part where you're saying about truth and researching all that, it's just brutal for me to read some things that supposedly I said, or, you know, it drives me crazy. I just have to ignore it and walk away otherwise it will eat you up. This mm-hmm. job is, being a commissioner is highly stressful. There's a lot of, a lot of pains that come with it, you know? And,
how do you, it's hard to refute people who, no matter what you say, will not believe you.
Right. That's true. That's out there. No matter
it doesn't what, matter what facts you say. They've made their judgments, man. They don't care what you do.
What facts you have?
Yeah,
you face them with. They still.
Yeah.
And sadly enough, I think then you restrict the people that would probably run for something, county commissioner, mm-hmm. because they're like, oh, I'm not putting myself into that.
Totally. Oh, man.
That's just not what I want, to do, especially if you have, you know, younger children or mm-hmm. something. Your family's exposed to a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Luckily, my kids are older and, mm-hmm. you know, they can stand back and watch it and say, oh, that's, you know, and that's too bad.
Mm-hmm. And it's stressful on the spouse. It's stressful. My gosh.
We all have differing opinions. And when if you can't sit and discuss it rather than make threats and accusations, then we have a real problem.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of things that I disagree with a lot of people, but if I can't sit like you and I are sitting and discuss it, then I just won't go there. Why would I even put myself in that position?
You know,
it's just not worth it.
Yeah.
I'll just walk away from that situation.
I think if the online community at large stopped trying to read people's minds, we'd be great.
Yeah.
You know, because we always have to read their mind and their motive was really this, even though they've never said it or gone there. But we pretend to read people's minds. I think mind reading is probably the worst mm-hmm. way of thinking that I see so often, especially about politicians. And,
yeah.
And, you know, like, oh, he made a decision I didn't like. Therefore, he's nefariously evil.
Right.
And must want to take over the world. And
he's associated with these people or that. And
right.
That doesn't have anything to do with it.
So what do you think's coming around the pike? You know, when you look ahead, obviously you're going to be in, hopefully for you, you're wanting to finish out this year in a couple more years. If you look out 5 years, 10 years, what are you seeing happening? Like, what's kind of your future outlook for the region?
Well, one of the things that worries me probably the most is explosive growth and lack mm-hmm. of infrastructure to handle that explosive growth. I mean, it's daunting to look out there and see the people that are flooding to our area and realize that we're really not very well prepared for that.
Right.
So that's probably the hardest thing that I see coming mm-hmm. down the road. I do see a lot of positive things.
Yeah, like what?
Dyer, the company that is now building the airplanes. I've met with those folks. Super positive group. I'm positive they're going to bring a lot of good things to the Sandpoint area. Yeah,
that's awesome.
They just have a great business outlook and just their commitment to the company and the community. So I'm really quite positive.
Yeah, that small town, be a good thing. Company that's you know,
made it big. Got to meet all of the CEO, the president of the the owner. Those mm-hmm. pretty intense, but. Very interesting folks from France.
That's awesome. Well, Jeff, man, I appreciate you coming on. Yeah. We'll have you back on, as I will have all the people running for office back in the fall, and get you in here, and you can talk about kind of your priorities and what you're looking at and all that kind of stuff, and do your campaign interview.
Right. I love the politics of it all.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on.
Sure.
Yeah, appreciate it.
And, anytime.
We'll have you on again soon.
Okay.
Thanks. Thank you for watching this episode of the Barner Breakdown. Special thanks to Ting and BCHA for sponsoring this show. For more shows or to be a guest, please visit barnerbreakdown.com. Have a great day.